Pop quiz frajer, kaj je zelene barve in zvečuje blagostanje človeka in družbe?
Zelene ekonomije. Ravnotežje med okoljsko vzdržnostjo, socialno pravičnostjo in zavedanje, da živimo na zemlji z omejenimi resursi. Tako kot to počno na Danskem. Ta ponedeljek ob 20. v Eureportaži na Radiu Študent.
Eurepa. Delno jo podpira Evropski parlament.
Zelene ekonomije. Predzadnja serija oddaj v sklopu projekta Eurepa, v katerem raziskujemo ekonomske alternative prevladujočemu sistemu, se bo ukvarjala z zeleno ekonomijo. Najprej je treba poudariti, da ne gre za enoten koncept. Uporablja se ga za označevanje različnih idej oziroma praks. Najbolj rigorozna definicija zaobjame tako skrb za okolje in odgovorno ekonomijo, kot tudi zahtevo po čim večji družbeni enakosti. Ideja je zelo blizu temu, kar je bolj poznano pod pojmom trajnostni razvoj. Obstajajo pa tudi bolj mehke oblike zelene ekonomije, od takih, katerih primarna skrb je okolje, do takšnih, ki v neumazanih industrijah vidijo zgolj novo ekonomsko nišo. V tokratni oddaji bomo predstavili dve danski praksi, ki se gibljeta nekje v polju med zadnjima dvema. Bolj celostnemu pogledu na zeleno ekonomijo se bomo posvetili v naslednjih dveh oddajah, ki bosta na sporedu naslednji dve nedelji. Prvi razlog, da se je ekipa Radija Študent odpravila na Dansko, je bil obisk centra Kalundborg Symbiosis na severozahodu največjega danskega otoka Zelandije. Center je lociran na območju ekoindustrijskega parka Kalundborg, ki velja za prvo industrijsko simbiozo na svetu. Termin, ki je izposojen iz ekologije, ima analogen pomen. V prvi vrsti gre za to, da je stranski produkt, odpadek, odvečna energija določene tovarne, surovina oziroma energija za drugo podjetje. Industrijski kompleks je začel spontano in neorganizirano nastajati leta 1961 in sicer s sodelovanjem med privatnim podjetjem, rafinerijo in mestno občino Kalundborg. Kasneje se je izkazalo, da ima takšen način povezovanja poslovni potencial za zasebna podjetja in stvar se je začela razvijati. Danes deluje znotraj ekoindustrijskega parka 17 fizično povezanih enot. Med njimi sta največji svetovni proizvajalki encimov in inzulina, Novo Zymes in Novo Nordisk, naftna in biomasna rafinerija Statoil in Inbicom, tovarna za izdelavo mavčnih plošč, prašičja in ribja farma ter druge. V centru, ki ni neposredno povezan s katerimkoli izmed podjetij nastanjenih v coni in katerega ključni cilj je predstavljati in širiti idejo industrijske simbioze drugim podjetjem in zainteresiranim državam, sta nas prejela Mete Skovbjerg in Bernd Jespersen. V prvem delu oddaje boste tako lahko slišali dele predstavitve, ki jih je bila ekipa Radija Študent deležna v centru Kalundborg Symbiosis in pogovora, ki je sledil. Za začetek si poslušajmo, kako se je vse skupaj sploh začelo razvijati.
It started in the year 1961. And the refinery started in 1955. And they wanted to increase their production and asked the municipality, can you give us some more water for cooling? But they didn't have it. They couldn't supply the company with water. So they sat together and what can we do? And then they started a project together, these two, the municipality and the refinery, and established a pipeline from a sea approximately 20 kilometers from here. And then they pumped water up here, cleaned it, and then they could increase the capacity of the refinery. Then it took some years until 1972. Then the power station also needed more water because they also built some new power plants over there, and the plasterboard company got refinery gas from the refinery. And then it went on. Novo Nordisk came to the city. This is pig farms getting some yeast slurry as
fruit.
Yes, no food for them. And then fish farm came too, and it went on until now 2010, where you can see all the projects is, that is in operation at the time.
Mreža povezav se je tako iz ekonomskega kot tudi iz ekološkega vidika izkazala za napredno, vendar pa Kalundborg ni edino mesto, kjer bi se tovrstna simbioza izplačala. V čem je torej Kalundborg poseben?
The industry was there. The Kalundborg has the second largest industry in Denmark. The largest industry areas in Copenhagen. And the physical distance was not very far from each other, so it's a good thing to connect the pipes. And the economy was there to do it. It was benefits of the project, and there were no legal barriers at that time to do it. And then the communication was very good. That's one of the key figures if you want to introduce industrial symbiosis. You need to get the CIOs to talk together. And one of the most important things is all companies want to show their products, but they don't want to show what they have in the waste bins. That's the secret. So therefore it's difficult to get them to work together.
You said that this grew very organically. Is there any incentive from the government, from the municipality?
Nothing yet.
So the CEOs, they wanted to talk to each other?
Yes, yes. And at the beginning, with the water from the sea to the refinery, it was a must. Because if they couldn't get the water, they couldn't grow, the refinery couldn't grow. And then this is one of the things that is special here, that the municipality is supporting the industries. Because they say, if the big companies move here, more employment, more benefits. But it was the size of the community. We are in total not even 50,000 citizens in the municipality. So it's a very small municipality also. All the managers were in the same Rotary Club. So they also knew each other. And therefore they trusted each other and wanted to help each other. And in this industrial symbiosis, there are no competitors involved. There's not two companies producing the same thing. That could give some problems. But then the waste baskets would also be the same.
Podlaga enkratnemu naključju so po mnenju Jespersena že obstoječa industrija, medsebojno poznavanje direktorjev podjetij in dobra komunikacija med njimi, majhnost mestne občine ter pravno okolje, ki ne predstavlja ovir. Na začetku, kot je opozorila Skov Bjergova in kot kaže tudi primer potrebe rafinerije po vodi, je bil glavni razlog za povezovanje potreba po omejenih virih surovin. vendar pa to v svetu biznisa seveda ne bi bilo dovolj. Izkazati se mora, da sta odpadek oziroma energija cenejši kot na prostem trgu. Zaradi nekonkurenčnosti sta se dve podjetji v ekoindustrijskem parku že tudi odklopili od industrijskega organizma.
There are two projects and these two projects there were no financial benefits in them anymore. The refinery gas from the refinery to Gyprok was more expensive than the new natural gas that came to the island. So of course they stopped this project, and over here at the Dong power station, at that time we had the fuel oil emulsion. That's a bitumen, a big lake in Venezuela, filled up with bitumen, you know, the same thing that's on the roads. And we burned it at the power station at that time. And it's filled with nickel and vanadium. So the ash was distributed to a company that could extract the nickel and the vanadium. But this product was also, suddenly it's the price of the oil emulsion grew to a price higher than coal, so we went over to coal again.
Okoljevarstvo je bilo v času formacije simbiotične industrijske cone, v veliki meri pa tudi še danes, sekundarnega pomena. To jasno pove tudi Skov Bjergova, ki pravi, da je z okoljevarstveno propagando podjetja nemogoče pritegniti k medsebojnemu prodajanju stranskih produktov oziroma odvečne energije. Toda to po mnenju obeh niti ni problem, saj ima takšno industrijsko sodelovanje poleg večje konkurenčnosti podjetij kot stranski produkt tudi pozitiven vpliv na okolje.
And if you look at this history of how the symbiosis developed, you'd see that one of the real incentives for the companies were scarce resources. At first it was water, and then it has become the price, and then there was the story about the gypsum. So it's really scarce resources and then the economic benefit. So whenever we're trying to sort of sell a project to two companies, we don't sell it as an environmental benefit. Mm-hmm. Because it's really it's a hard bargain, unless you have regulations that make it profitable. So it's really about the economic incentives.
But your main concern here is environment problem for you. Or would you like to that the companies would be more competitive, or that they would produce less?
We believe that it's the same thing.
Goes hand in hand, it's called green economy. Mm-hmm. And that's what you see in all like policy papers from the EU and from the Danish government. It's the green economy that people focus upon, and that's growth, green growth, but also like not becoming green while you grow. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a smarter way of producing.
Ker žene industrijo v Kalundborg Symbiosis spoznanje, da je uspešno gospodarstvo v neposredni navezavi z okoljsko problematiko, so se v konglomerat vključile tudi nekatere bolj inovativne zeleno-tehnološke proizvodnje. Med njimi sta tudi pridelava bioetanola iz slame, pri čemer se proizvede še biobrikete za kurjavo in C5 melaso, ki je uporabna kot prehrana za živali. Gre za prvo tovrstno predelovalnico na svetu, ki pa je tako uspešna, da bo energetsko podjetje Dong razširilo in za nekajkrat povečalo proizvodnjo tudi na danskem polotoku Jutlandiji. Drugi projekt med inovativnimi tehnologijami, sicer za enkrat še poskusni, ki je po mnenju Jespersena eden najboljših, se prav tako v prvi vrsti tiče proizvodnje bioetanola. Osnovna ideja je, da se z umetnim gojenjem hitro rastočih mikroalg na relativno majhnih površinah pridela osnova za biogorivo, zraven pa še visoko kvalitetne snovi za kozmetično in prehransko industrijo ter surovino za bioplastiko.
So what we want to do is to find different algaes. Then we will use the sunlight. We will use some CO2, maybe from a power station or from INBICON. They also produce CO2. We can compress it, and then we can use it here. And then our project is to clean wastewater. So all these microalgaes, then by coming into some reactors, they produce new bio-oil and O2. So now you can, when you burn a fossil or a fuel, you'll get CO2, and you can put it into this reaction and get oil out again.
Yeah, really, you have two byproducts or waste products that you use in the production of it.
You use
the new oil, the CO2, and the wastewater from industries. So it's a perfect match to the symbiosis.
And this is still a pilot project, or is it still on
the project? We will hopefully start building the test plant in March, April in this year.
Poleg neodvisne posredniške vloge med podjetji in podajanja informacij zainteresiranim podjetjem se namerava center Kalund Borg Symbiosis v prihodnje okvarjati tudi z označevanjem izdelkov, proizvedenih na ekološko-simbiotičen način. To nameravajo storiti na način, ki je že v praksi, na primer pri pravično-trgovinskih izdelkih, pri čemer naj bi logo zagotavljal, da je bil produkt proizveden po določenih standardih. To vrstno označevanje izdelkov se čedalje pogosteje uporablja kot orožje nevladnih organizacij za spodbujanje potrošnje izdelkov, ki so ekološko in družbeno sprejemljivejši. Certificiranje pa ima še eno vlogo, bolj ekonomske narave. Produkti z zeleno, nizkooglično, pravično, trgovinsko in podobnimi označbami postajajo vedno nujnejši za vstop na nova, delno že zasičena tržišča. O tem in o pomenu načina proizvodnje kot podobnem Kalund Borg Symbiosis za ohranitev delovnih mest v ruralnejših območjih Evrope in znotraj Evropske unije same, Mete Skovbjerg.
If you look at other like demands from consumers, you look at people demanding transparency in the products all the way through from production. So you want, you could label it. So far you have fair trade and ecology labeling on your products in Denmark, but as we've seen in the UK, you have carbon footprints on some of the products, so you can see how resource efficient your product is compared to other products. So I think there's an incentive also from the consumers, a pressure from consumers, bottom up. And then also, on the whole social dimension, I think what people are really looking at, and a municipality like Kalundborg, we're looking at globalization and urbanization. Everything is moving towards the major cities. For our case, it would be Copenhagen. And on an EU level, would see that a lot of the production is moving to other countries outside Europe. So it's becoming very expensive to produce in Europe, and in order to keep production in Europe, you have to make it profitable. And you can only make it profitable if you make sure that there's something, either high-skilled labor that you can't really, that they can't provide in other parts of the world, or some sort of smarter system, a smarter way of producing, a smarter way of working together. Otherwise, you can't keep production in Europe, it'll be too expensive. So it's not really, it's the social dimension and equality, it's also about keeping jobs in Europe.
Poslušate drugo polovico oddaje Eurepa, ki se sedaj odpravlja v dansko prestolnico Kopenhagen, kjer kot posrednik med zasebnim sektorjem, akademskimi ustanovami in mestno upravo deluje organizacija Clean Tech Cluster. Že njeno ime razodeva, da se ukvarja s čistimi tehnologijami, komunikacijo med omenjenimi sektorji pa organizira s pomočjo tako imenovanih klasterjev oziroma industrijskih grozdov. To je sistem organizacije podjetij, ki pokrivajo sorodne niše različnih panog in so locirana geografsko blizu vsak sebi. Pri tem jih ne vodi centralizirana uprava, ampak skupen interes, ki usmerja sicer medsebojno neodvisne enote. Več o delovanju Copenhagen Clean Tech Clusterja nam razloži Rune Rasmussen, vodja sekretarijata omenjene organizacije.
So Copenhagen Clean Tech Cluster is basically the best funded cluster initiative in Europe, independently of area. So it's about 20 million euros over 5 years. And the idea is that the secretariat where we sit is still rather small, which is normal. But rather than trying to facilitate cooperation between universities and companies, we kind of include everybody into the project. So we don't try to get them to work together. We have defined this cooperation within the application.
Rasmussen nadaljuje s pojasnjevanjem čistih tehnologij, ki se razvijajo v sklopu te organizacije.
It's basically technology that will use less resources on doing something that we already do, that will stop us from spending resources in the first place, for instance, or it can be cleaning up after after an oil disaster or something. The cleaning up of this is also clean tech. So the clean tech is throughout the whole value chain, so it's from the production, and then it's pre-production. If you can prevent something from being productive, it's cleaner production, and it's also a cleaner way to clean up or recycling, for instance.
Zakaj so se ti koncepti najbolj razvili na Danskem?
Like everybody else, we spend a lot of oil here. I think it was more than 90% of our energy consumption, which was from oil. And so after the oil crisis, Denmark said, what can we do? What can we do to be less dependent on oil in the future? So that's when this whole wind turbine started to be set in production. So the fact that Denmark is one of the largest producers of wind turbines today actually started in the late 70s, and then it has developed. So there's been a focus on, especially on energy production and electricity, based on non-fossil fuels. So we also have a lot of the garbage, for instance. So you can see, if you look at the Danish trends, the CO2 emissions have remained more or less stable since the late 70s, but the GDP has doubled. So we have actually managed to decouple the resource use with the economic growth. And I think it's kind of like a key explanation of why Denmark tends to be ahead on some clean tech solutions, is that we just started pretty early.
Danska je sedaj res med prvimi na svetu na področju razvoja zelenih tehnologij, to pa se je doseglo predvsem z energetskimi davki, ki so delovali kot motivacija podjetjem za investicije v zelene vire energije. Tako pridobljena sredstva so na to ponovno investirali v ekonomijo in potrošnike ter tako omogočili nakup novih zelenih tehnologij. Sodeč po trditvah danskih funkcionarjev so gospodarstvo tako pripravili tudi do investicij v razvoj, zaradi česar je Danska med prvimi začela razvijati tehnologije, ki so se druge še vedno smatrale za neekonomične. Bruna Rasmussena smo zato vprašali, ali bi njihov model lahko deloval tudi drugod po Evropi.
When you look at green growth, in the short term, people think green growth as selling clean tech products. But usually when you talk green growth in the longer term, it's acknowledged that it is necessary to decouple, as we just talked about, decouple resources from economic growth. And I guess everybody agrees we just have to do it, because as resources become much more expensive, if we don't, from a strictly economic point of view, if you use too many resources in your production, you're just not competitive anymore. So I think that from a European point of view, all countries know that we need to get there in, 2030. So in that thing, in that sense, I don't think the Danish model as such should be exported. I think it's a general perception that some of the things we do and others do is they're imperative to.
Rune Rasmussen se opira na projekcije, po katerih bo v prihodnosti večina prebivalstva živela v urbanem okolju, zato ključni moment zelenih ekonomij vidi v razvoju velikih mest, v katerih je s kolektivnimi rešitvami mogoče ustvariti okolju prijazen človeški habitat.
When we look at the green economy and how to solve our climate issues, I think cities has been very much involved for two reasons. One is that cities simply become, in terms of quantity, much more interesting. In the 1900, there were 13% of us living in cities. Now we are a bit more than 50%, so it's more normal now to live in cities than not. And the projections is that by 2050, there'll be 70% of people living in cities. So basically, in order to solve our climate issues, we need to look at cities. And also, in the cities, there are a number of ways that where the fact that we live so close together make it possible to use more of these collective solutions for things. So for instance, like a metro. A metro is a much better way. So metro is clean tech in that sense, but it's also environmentally friendly. So a metro, you need a certain density, but it's much, much more effective and a greener way of transport, obviously. The whole bicycling, you need a city. To have electric cars, at least for now, you need a city. To do district heating or district cooling, you need a city. But with district heating, you save, I think it's 80% or 85% of CO2 compared to local heaters. So in that sense, by solving our problems, we need to look at cities, both in terms of quantity, but also because cities allow certain collective solutions to be done. So.
Kot smo omenili že na začetku, koncept zelene ekonomije ni homogen, ampak se pod njim razumejo različne ideje in prakse. V tokratni reportaži smo predstavili dve, ki poskušata znotraj obstoječega tržnega sistema spodbujati zeleno industrijo, kar jim tudi zelo dobro uspeva. Ta sfera zelene ekonomije pa ne posveča ravno mnogo časa družbenim vprašanjem. Več o tem polju torej v naslednjih dveh oddajah. Prva, v kateri bomo pregledali evropsko politiko na to temo, bo na sporedu to nedeljo ob 10. dopoldne, druga pa naslednjo ob istem času. Oddajo sta pripravila Gregor Kuhar in Luka Tetičković. Tehnicirajo je Linč, prav sem Mato.
Pop quiz frajer. Kaj je zelene barve in zvečuje blagostanje človeka in družbe?
Zelene ekonomije. Ravnotežje med okoljsko vzdržnostjo, socialno pravičnostjo in zavedanje, da živimo na zemlji z omejenimi resursi. Tako kot to počno na Danskem. Ta ponedeljek ob 20. v Eureportaži na Radiu Študent.
Eurepa. Delno jo podpira Evropski parlament.